It is time now for History Matters, taking a look back at this week in history with the one and only Mr. Scott Washington, historian extraordinaire and sporter of a very lovely velvet shirt this afternoon. How are you?
I'm just getting into the seasonal feel.
It's a very nice seasonal. It's green.
Yes, it is. It just felt like that kind of weather it was starting to be.
I think so.
I mean, 50s, it's just like I knew a fellow who was up in Alaska, and he would say that the native Eskimo people would always at the, summer is very short,
right.
But the first sign of winter, when it would drop down to like 32, they'd put on everything and they would complain. And then the next day they'd be walking around.
They'd be totally fine,
so,
right?
Yeah, this is a good time to bring out all the heavy winter wear and then we'll
and complain about it.
Right.
And then we get used to it quick. Yeah,
well, warm.
I was in Florida a week ago and we got into the, and it was right at the, we were coming back right at the time that the temperature here was dropping. So we got into the car in Florida on Sunday morning and it was already getting close to 80, 85 degrees because it was hot all week.
Right.
We got out of the car in North Carolina and it's 65.
That's right.
What happened?
That's right. 30 degrees
across three states, and that was just a huge, huge difference.
I mean, that was a change, total change not only of weather but of season.
Yeah.
In one
night. It's still 90 degrees in Florida. Like,
is that right?
I think so. I don't know about today, but up until very recently, at least.
Well, it's kind of interesting because of the weather and what people are wearing. You know, that's something that's just part of history, and you find people, especially when we see, and especially colonial era, and they're dressed out and. It's heavy gear.
Like unbelievable layers.
And
summertime.
What's going on? But it was just, they just got used to it. And
framers of the Constitution in Philadelphia would never have finished if they weren't so hot and sweaty by the time July and August rolled around.
Tall ceilings, that's the
fun. Ben Franklin smelled terrible.
You heard it here first. Breaking news.
I guarantee you I'm not wrong.
Well, this weekend there was all kind of colonial things that came up, and it was just so much fun. Like it is from week to week, we kind of look at this week in history, and it's always amazing. Like today, when I was hearing the wonderful masterpiece theater theme, I couldn't help but think of this day in history, October 25th, 1774, when the women in Eatonton, North Carolina, resolved to stop buying English tea and cloth to protest taxation without representation.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this is modeled after somewhat the Boston Tea Party, which occurred December 16, 1773. But this one is a little bit different because it was larger. It included not only the tea but the cloth, and it was the women who did this. And they signed a petition. And it was well reported. Even it got reported as far as England, which I think was kind of interesting that you would find
that. Did it ever spread beyond Eatonton, or was it just an Eatonton thing?
I think it did. Well, I not that we find anything that distinctive, but I think that people started to do this, said no. And the fact that these women did, certainly along the coast, certainly, I don't think that was the only time they did it that one day.
I
think they just said from that point on.
I mean, that's a significant thing, though, because you think about the Boston Tea Party and then this event the following year and how widely reported it was and how, I mean, we hadn't quite gotten to the Declaration of Independence
yet,
but the Boston Massacre was several years earlier. The Boston Tea Party had happened. We're already kind of moving in that. Not just angry at the British, but ready to declare our independence from the British level of upset. I would have thought that in a situation like this, if someone comes up the idea of, let's have an economic boycott and stop buying tea, that it would have spread beyond Boston and Eatonton. But
people
in Virginia kept on buying the tea.
The only thing made it distinctive here is they actually did a petition. They actually signed it.
Mm-hmm.
And other people may have got to that way in a private way.
Okay.
I mean, we vote with not only at elections, but we vote with our dollars and our time. So I think that happens a lot of time. People say, no, I'm not going to buy this or do this. Maybe not publicly, but maybe privately. And certainly I think that was the case. And we've all seen the license plate plates here in North Carolina, First in Freedom, referring to North Carolina's pivotal role through Alamance County going forward in being very instrumental. And I was born in the Midwest, grew up in New England. I thought that was where it was. No, I come down here, and suddenly I understand a lot more about what was happening in New England. Mm. And a lot of this has its roots here in North Carolina. And this is one of those kind of events that has taken on more significance as time has gone on.
All right. So that was today in history, yes. 1774. What else happened?
All right. There's another one. Also, this is a week when we have the Cuban Missile Crisis mm-hmm. comes up, when these missiles are being brought into Cuba. And we've all heard about this during JFK's time, and it's brought to the United Nations. And then finally, there's an embargo, and finally the missiles are taken out of Cuba. So that's a kind of a big deal here. It's interesting because it's also this week in 1886, October 28th, 1886, when the Statue of Liberty was dedicated, the 151-foot-high gift from the French mm-hmm. people. That still stands today. But there's another thing that happens, and maybe you can help fill this in.
Uh-oh. Relying on me for historical information. Yes. This never ends well.
No, this is always
It never
good.
Ends where you this expect
is,
it
no,
to.
No, this is a good one.
I'm going to go off on
Saturday,
a tangent.
October 27th, 1787 is when the Federalist Papers, the series of 85 papers in defense of the Constitution, begin appearing in New York newspaper. Written by Alexander Hamilton, John Jay, and James Madison. What was the point of this?
So Alexander Hamilton had started to write a series of essays, and he had signed himself, and he had signed everything. They all signed with Roman names because right. there was a very
they wanted to be anonymous.
Kind of the founding. Well, yeah. they wanted to be anonymous, but they also wanted to kind of harken back to the days of the Roman Republic. That was what they were all kind of looking back to. So they all were taking on these mm-hmm. Roman names, and Alexander Hamilton started to write a series of essays, and I think he signed it Caesar or something very not Roman Republican, like really sending the wrong message with his with his pen name, and they didn't go over very well, maybe yeah. partly for that reason. And so he decided to start again, and he wanted to write a series of papers that would just comprehensively defend the Constitution from start to finish. He got John Jay and James Madison in on the writing of it. Jay actually wrote yeah. a lot of the early ones, and then he had to pull back because he had a personal commitment, so it ended up being Hamilton and Madison writing most of them. But these were newspaper editorials that were designed to convince New Yorkers specifically to go along with and to ratify the Constitution. And this was at a time when the ratification fight was going on in states all across right. the country. Every single state had their ratification conventions, and more states were signing on to it. But you needed 9 to ratify the Constitution. For really practical purposes, you needed mostly unanimous consent to the Constitution from all 13 states, because otherwise right. you're just going to have these outliers here and there. And they knew that it wasn't going to work unless you had the really big states all signing right. on. So New York, Virginia, Pennsylvania, those three in particular, and Massachusetts. And New York was one of the states where it was very much up in the air. So they wrote all of these editorials, and it was one after another, after another, after another, that appeared over the course of several months, and they all had anti-Federalists that were writing in response. And it got to the point where New Yorkers just got sick of the whole thing. Like we today, like, turn on the TV and we hear that, we see the political ads. They yeah. hit us every single commercial break. You get 5 of them in a row, and we're sick of them. That was exactly the same reaction from the original New Yorkers to the Federalist Papers. There were letters to the editor saying, please shut these people up. We don't want to hear anymore. We're either going to vote for or against. You're not going to change our minds now. It's exactly the same arguments, but they kept publishing them, and through number 85, New York ratified the Constitution, mostly after all of the other major states had right. already done, yes, and then it was pretty much a foregone yeah. conclusion. And then they get collected in a volume, and years later, people start looking back at these essays as kind of the essays written by the people who were kind of pivotal in writing the Constitution in the first place to explain what they were thinking. So it yes. was only later that the Federalist Papers kind of took on the authoritative or, voice right. that they've got now.
Because I remember
this is my 5-minute hearings. Lecture on the Federalist Papers.
No, it's wonderful. Oh, that is so exciting. It's so, you know, we think this is all settled.
People
but
just
no.
flipping through channels right now. They're like, I'll just tune into CHL and see what music they're playing. No, lecture on the Federalist Papers. That's what you're getting.
No, it really is interesting because to understand that context and that people felt really passionately about this. Mm-hmm. is, I think, really, and your insights on this, I knew you would be the right person to ask as to exactly how this to be, because we heard this during the Kavanaugh hearings. Even Kavanaugh talked about the Federalist Papers again.
Yeah, and, he should read them.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's right. I have read a couple of them, and I'm like, okay, well, that's good enough. I kind of know the arguments.
Well, I mean, you should read them, but he should read them, is my point.
Yes, I think that would be good. Well, there's, along with this colonial theme, I don't know, just this week, a couple things were really interesting. On October 22nd, 1780, is when General George Washington ordered Major General Nathaniel Greene to assume command of the Southern Army. And he assumes command in Charlotte December 3rd, 1780, and is pivotal to the success. Greene had come into, and he actually has a connection here with Orange County, come into Hillsborough to take command of the army. After Horatio Gates was soundly defeated in Camden, South Carolina, and we have the Midnight Ride of Paul Revere, Gates rode 200 miles in 24 hours to get back to the head of his army to report failure, you know. But so Hillsborough plays a pivotal role in the Revolutionary War.
Right.
Which is
under... You know who we actually should build statues to is the horses.
The horses,
right? Because,
yes.
Like, Paul Revere didn't do anything. He just sat there yelling while the horse was doing all the work. Let's build a statue to the horse.
The horse. I think that's a great idea. Well, maybe we can have that. I think that would be...
Just
a...
without Paul Revere on it. Like, Paul Revere's horse. Let's erect that statue.
That might be a great idea for the spot where
there's
the
There's a place
sit.
On
that's
campus
right.
that's looking for a statue right now. Yeah.
Well, some would say nay, nay to one. It, but I think, you know.
You don't feel bad about that at all, do you?
Nay, I don't.
Scott Washington here in the studio with History Matters, looking back at this week in history. What else we got?
Okay, well, actually, 1945 is a kind of an interesting date, October 24th, 1945. Mm-hmm. The United Nations is founded with 50 countries signing its charter. And that's pretty significant. Right after World War II, an attempt to avert another world war, and the idea being, let's talk, let's communicate, even if we have different languages, we have translators. Sometimes it gets unfairly demeaned by people on the far right, but there really are reasons for its existence and for all the good it really does in so many ways across the world. Even if anybody's gone trick-or-treating for Halloween and carried those little UNICEF
boxes. UNICEF
bags. That's right. Yeah, and that really does help people. So that's a significant moment in history. There's another one, too, that's just local, and these just kind of pop up from time to time. And it's on that same date, October 24th, 1823, which is when Richard Benahan purchases more than 400 acres known as Horton Grove from William Horton and becomes part of this vast land. And at that time, there is no Durham County. It's all part of this large Orange County. Mm-hmm. But that becomes what we now know today as Stagville, that people can go out and visit. And what's really interesting, and I urge anybody who's never been there before, yes, there's the plantation house where the people lived, and they have a nice museum. But the more important thing is Horton Grove itself, where you can actually see some of these residences where enslaved people stayed. Mm-hmm. And it is a somber place, and you can really touch history and feel like you're there, where this terrible travesty of American history and world history happened. Where, you know, and I mean, it's that thing common that we fought a whole civil war about, which is slavery. But these enslaved folks that helped farm and make this a great plantation, they actually lived. And you can almost feel that presence. It's profound. And I urge anybody who wants to feel that bit of history to go out there and visit this wonderful state historic site.
Talking history, this week in history with Scott Washington. We've got time for one more.
What okay. Well, then I've got to bring up this one because it's one of my favorites. The birthday on October 23rd, 1895, of Maury Maverick. Now, this was an American politician, a U.S. congressman from Texas from 1935 to 1939, mayor of San Antonio from 1939 to 41. Now, you would think, all right, why do we need to know? Why is this important? Because he coined the word gobbledygook.
And, because, you know, someone had to.
Not just gobbledygook. It is just, I hope that everyone listening can use this in a sentence or find a reason for using it, because it is so good. When you see stuff, the craziness you say, you don't have to start to cursing. You can just say, it's gobbledygook.
There you go. This Week in History, that's History Matters. Scott Washington, thank you so much.
As always, thank you.